GrowPass doors are open. Go grab yourself a GrowPass, everybody. Membership at mygrowpass.com is officially open. We are having so much fun with all the additional content and prizes and community at mygrowpass.com. Check it out today, everybody. Today we have Mary Beth Sanchez. Love Mary Beth, my close personal friend, master of regenerative agriculture and IPM. She's lovely. And today we're talking about the wildfires and synthetic nutrients, organic agriculture, of course. A couple fan questions. It's a real good one. It's a real doozy. Everybody loves Mary Beth. Before we jump in, though, shout out to Green Goddess Supply. GreenGoddessSupply.com is the website. Promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off all smoking accessories. And members of MyGrowPass.com get 25% off of accessories and $100 off their flagship Armoire Grow Chamber. The Armoire Grow Chamber is really cool. It's a very sleek one-plant grow system. If you're concerned about aesthetics, if you want your grow to look nice and you got a small scale, Green Goddess has got you covered. The Armoire is really, really cool. Go and check it out. But also, Green Goddess Supply sells smoking accessories. They sell dab kits. They sell pipes, bongs, bowls, everything you need to consume that homegrown. I'm smoking out of the dirtiest old frickin' pipe right now, and it's shameful. I should hit up Green Goddess ASAP. Get myself something nice. Treat myself to something nice. You know what I'm saying? Go treat yourself, GrowCast listeners. GreenGoddessSupply.com. GrowCast is the code for 10% off. Join MyGrowPass.com for 25% off this site and so much more. All of our discounts, including $100 off the Armoire. Gotta be the most aesthetically pleasing grow chamber out there. All right, everyone, let's jump in with Mary Beth. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. GrowPass membership is open. As of today, it should be open. MyGrowPass.com, everybody. Check it out. It's an incredible, incredible program. The premier cultivation membership program out there. So excited and excited to see you new members flooding in today. Thank you all for your support, and thank you listeners, too. Even if you're not a member and you're just subscribing, we really appreciate you guys. And we continue to strive for greatness on GrowCast Podcast. Today, speaking of greatness, we have a lovely return guest, a show favorite, defines show favorite, she does. Mary Beth Sanchez is on the line. What's going on? How are you today?
Oh, pretty good. You know, we have a lot of fires going on here, so we have varying levels of smoky days, depending on which way the wind's blowing. Oh. But we really have them basically 360 degrees around us. There's a fire somewhere not that far away, so it's kind of, yeah. But recently, it's cleared up a little bit, so, you know, from walking outside, isn't painful to breathe right now, and I can see some sunshine and shadows. Yeah, it's always nice instead of that completely dull gray.
My gosh, man.
You know, kind of.
It's really hard to watch from other parts of the country because it seems far away from here in the Midwest, but we see the footage of farms just burning to the ground.
Yeah. Well, you see, you know, that the smoke travels all the way across the country. It's already gone. Probably around the globe. I heard that it was affecting the sunsets in the UK.
Yeah, that's so what I heard too.
It's probably gone around the world by now.
But and it seems to concentrate in a couple places. For instance, whenever those Western wildfires take off, we never get it too bad here in Chicago. But right across the border, I guess Ontario and Toronto gets it really bad. Something to do with the wind current kind of brings it up north.
And whether or not there's a valley with the wind, you know, inversion layers and all that kind of stuff. Certain places will collect it more. But anyway, today is not a bad day.
Okay. And as long as you're safe.
It's going to be sunny.
We were talking off air. You're safe. Exactly. And you are experiencing quite a bit of ash, though, right? It's coming down on your plants.
Yeah. And it's more than it's really healthy because ash is such an alkaline substance. It's really just right up there at the top of the scale. And it can burn just, you know, the same way that fire and ice both burn. So do alkaline and acid both burn when they're at the extremes like that. So it's unfortunate for a lot of plants. It's not doing them a whole lot of favors. But getting it off is a trick. You'll see some people doing videos showing they've got their leaf blowers going, but that kind of just sort of unsettles it for a while. But the thing is, it's still kind of continuously falling. Mm. So, you know, you've got to repeat.
Right.
And if you get it wet, that can be, you know, make it more caustic. And, you know, people are noticing it'll eat the paint off your car. If it's sitting on your car and it gets wet, it can be a drag for the
Holy
plants.
Holy crap.
Also.
What do you do for your plants to kind of remove the ash, or is there anything you can do?
Yeah. Well, at the nursery, what I've been doing is when I'm watering, I'm basically also just giving the plants a shower just to try to get their, you know, surfaces refreshed a bit. And I like to use the Zymes too. And I use that. You can use a really small amount just because it's kind of soapy.
Right.
It'll help with the washing part, you know, getting things loosened up and removed.
Jeez.
There's, yeah. And especially the pests really love smoky climate.
Oh, they do?
For some reason,
imagine.
The mites just love it.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And so figured the more preventative pesticide stuff I get in there at the same time, the better, because it is going to, you know, if you're washing and things, there is going to be a danger of mold. The temperatures are getting slightly cooler now. You know, we were up in the hundreds. Now we're only in the 80s and 90s. But it's getting to where we're having more high 70s as the high of the day. So things are finally turning to autumn. It's supposed to be officially autumn in a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
Or a few days, actually. Time is flying faster than my brain is. But yeah, it's coming. That equinox is right around the corner there where we're officially being autumn. And, you know, up in the mountains up here, it used to be we had such distinct changes of the four seasons. And it was almost like a light switch when the solstices and equinoxes came. But climate's getting so weird. You know, everything's getting kind of stretched out. So I don't know how long summer's going to last this year. Seems like we go summer, winter, and we very little fall and spring in the middle
That's
anymore.
That's exactly what I've noticed, too. It's exactly right. How does the mold and, how does the ash affect the mold? I'd imagine that, well, first of all, it's got to suffocate the plant's kind of breathing capabilities, right? Is that what you worry about when it covers your plants like that?
Well, anything that's covering your plant's going to reduce the photosynthesis. And, you know, everybody wants to grow, and this is the time of the year when you're hoping to get your last growth spurt in, or, you know, you're feeding your flowers and that kind of thing. So nobody wants to have their light cut off right at this time, even though you're in a period where your light is being reduced every day. But it's hard for them to photosynthesize at all. I mean, we had some days that were just so thick with the smoke, it was just like the sun didn't come out for a couple of days.
Yeah.
You kind of know what they feel like in Alaska during the long winters.
Yeah, holy crap.
You get a little sort of a little pinch of a sort of a light, but it all very filtered and very, very
It surprises
weird.
Me that the pests like it, though. And I was going to ask, does that apply to mold and mildew, too? I almost feel like the ash would, like, I don't know, like prevent that.
Well, because it changes the pH.
You know,
it may have some, and mold and mildew is so pH dependent. So it may have some inhibiting effect. I don't nearly know, but what I've noticed is that it resembles it a lot. So when you're out there scoping, looking for things, you might say, oh, is that ash or is that mold?
Oh,
and you really have
difficult.
To get a lot more careful when you're looking at things. Well, you know, especially if your eyes aren't absolutely as fabulous as they once were. But I did notice a little bit of powder mold on one leaf
that I looked at the other day. That's nuts.
It
doesn't give you a break, is what I'm saying. Like, you don't get rained on with ash, but the pests hate it. It's like you get the ash, and then the pests love it, and you're still susceptible to mold and mildew. That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of good nutrients in the ash, but like all nutrients, everything in moderation.
Sure.
And what you're getting is just way too much, way too much.
In the short term, I'd imagine, but
I don't know if you're familiar with the, what's his name? Fukuoka, I think is his last name, Matsuyama Fukuoka, something like that. He wrote The One Straw Revolution, which is a really interesting book about gardening. He kind of inherited a farm that he wasn't really interested in paying attention to and kind of went to hell. And then he decided one day he was going to, you know, try to get it together, but he was really kind of what they call a lazy farmer. He wanted to do as little as possible. What he noticed over time was that the less he did, the better things actually got.
That's awesome. Masanobu Fukuoka, author of The One Straw Revolution, An Introduction to Natural Farming. Oh, that's cool.
It's an amazing technique that he has come up with over the years. And it's basically, it's a cover cropping technique where he's growing two kinds of grains. Well, he grows other things as well, but it started off like with rice and wheat. And so when he's not growing rice, he's growing wheat. But when he's, before he's harvested the one, he's already laid down the seed for the other so that the ground is never bare And he takes all his straw and he puts it down in his mulch. And but he did a thing with the potash once. He did before he got, you know, his technique perfected as he was experimenting, he threw a bunch of ash out onto his field once, thinking, you know, because of the minerals and, you know, thinking that would be a good fertilizer technique. And what it did was basically killed off all the spiders and things that were his best pest control. He had just nothing but problems with it. It was just a problem to get rid of the excessive ashes that he'd thrown out. And he realized, okay, that was a big mistake. That's not the way to apply it. With these kind of things, usually the best ways to apply are to first compost them and then to apply your compost.
Mm.
And that's kind of what he does in his technique of, he makes seed balls out of like mud and stuff.
Wow.
And puts his seeds in them, and he takes these seed balls and he just tosses them all over. They land where they land. And so when the rain comes, they sprout. They've already got that like compost layer around them. So they've got something that protects the seeds so the birds aren't eating them before they're sprouting. But when the rains come, then they've got something there and they go and they sprout, and they fantastic diversity. And it takes some effort. It's all like manual labor the way he's got it down. But, you know, when you live where he lives, you've got manual laborers.
Wow, man.
And
fascinating stuff.
With just spending your day growing things with zero outside inputs.
Yeah, it looks like there's a couple documentaries on it too, like available on YouTube. So check that out, everyone. The One
yes.
Straw Revolution.
It is a very interesting technique. It's, you know, not so much like the Korean natural farming. You know, you're involved with making a lot of lactobacillus and applying this all the time, and, you know, applying bacteria and things all the time. Where with the One Straw Revolution, you basically what you have to do is you plant and you harvest. You don't do much else.
Love it.
You make your
seed
balls.
My style of farming,
baby.
Seed
balls.
My yeah. style of farming. Less is more. Yeah. And I guess that leads nicely. That was a good segue there, Mary Beth, into today's
Thank
main
you.
Topic. Today we are talking about nutrients. We're talking about synthetic nutrients.
Oh, yeah.
We are big fans of organic agriculture on this podcast. We are bigger fans of people growing cannabis and growing their own cannabis and home growing. So I don't want this to come off as some sort of attack. I've said this before on you synthetic growers. I love you synthetic growers. I hope you stay subscribed to this show. I hope that you one day consider switching to organic, I must say. But we are diving into today all these questions that I've had, Mary Beth, that I feel like don't really satisfyingly get answered about synthetic nutrients, you know, like where they've come from, what we know about the chemicals in them, and just try to shed some light on this subject. And if you guys are just now tuning in and this is all new to you, you can go back and listen to other growcasts with Mary Beth. When we talk about natural farming, you can go back and listen to Chris Trump and these other episodes. I hope that this inspires you down a path of natural farming today. That would definitely be what excites me most. But this is for everybody. I want to make that clear. We are all inclusive here at Growcast. So
yes,
with that being said, let's get into this, Mary Beth. I think that that's probably a good place to start, is this one burning question that you've answered better than anybody else. I believe we've touched on this before, but, you know, these synthetic nutrients that we buy, whether they're the traditional bottled you know, water nutrients, or now this new dry powder, which I'm a bigger fan of than the bottles. I've always wondered,
definitely,
where does this stuff come from? Like, I know that it comes from a variety of sources. I know that sometimes it's mined. I know other times it's like a byproduct.
Yes.
Where does most of it or the majority come from?
Well, in the case of the synthetic nutrients, they're basically mined usually from open pit mining operations, and it's often really toxic, and they have a lot of toxic waste products and things that, you know, unfortunately, it's often done in a case where there's a little village of some indigenous people nearby, and they get completely poisoned out of their own land, and, you know, everything gets destroyed, and these people leave, and sometimes they're charged fines or ordered to clean up, but this doesn't actually happen. It can be a problem in that regard, and that's mostly the strictly synthetic nutrients I'm talking about.
So they find like a vein of like potassium phosphate, like they would find a vein of gold? Is that how that works?
Well, there's certain minerals that are rich in potassium, and they mine them and then they extract it.
That makes more sense.
Like langbeinite. We all know about langbeinite because that's often used in a lot of fertilizer mixes or soil mixes. Will throw langbeinite because that'll be your potassium source.
Oh, interesting.
And there's a another mineral, carnal. Carnal light sounds almost obscene, but it's you know, another source of potassium. There's another thing called sylvite that's another source, and polyhalite is another source. But the main way that I like to get it, that I think is the superior way, because you're not involved in any open pit mining, is to get deposits from lake bottoms and seabeds and from kelp. But these things also can be done in a really environmentally destructive way. But they can also be done in a really, you know, okay way if the people are making the effort. There has to be somebody making the effort.
Okay. So
to not
all of it is.
Don't just go in. Okay. Right. Don't just rip out every bit of kelp that you see, but you can harvest, you know, say take the top half off and leave the bottom to grow back. You know, that kind of a principle where you're not coming in just ripping out the entire seabed, but rather going in and taking a bit here and a bit there, or, you know, things. There's ways
harvesting
of even,
sustainably.
You know, such as, yeah, like when they do forestry where they don't necessarily have to clear cut. I know some foresting companies that actually don't clear cut. They actually make the effort to go in and take this and that tree and make sure they still have a forest that looks like a forest when you're walking around, you know.
Right.
Doesn't look like, oh my God, what did they do over there? They shaved that entire hillside and now it's all erosion. And, you know, little things that go wrong after you make the money and go, that it can happen.
So, but you would say that the majority, like the vast majority of big ag nutrients come from these mining operations?
Yes. Unfortunately, because most big ag nutrients are, you know, they just want the least expensive, most readily available, you know, it's market thing. They've got the salesman come all day and they're good friends with the farmers. They can't say no to them.
Right.
Sometimes it's locked into if you're in the Monsanto group, it's locked into your seeds. You know, your seeds are already come coated with all kinds of things, and you're not allowed to even save seeds from your crop if you're locked in the Monsanto nightmare.
Ugh,
it's one of those things where they suck farmers in and really bend them over afterwards.
Jeez,
I don't
man.
Feel that I'm a fan of Monsanto. I'm sorry.
Yeah, me neither.
I've had out loud arguments with them before.
I remember my family has had property on Molokai for quite some time, and there's Monsanto is present on Molokai, one of the smallest, most cute, humble Hawaiian islands, and they burned down their office.
the
locals, they went and burned down Monsanto's office. Monsanto rebuilt it, and the locals went and burnt it down again.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's like, man, they don't fuck around. You're fucking with
you
the Hawaiians.
I mean, we can do this, play this game as long as you can.
I shouldn't lie. I really shouldn't be laughing at that type of destruction, but I'm with you on that side, Mary Beth. My God.
Yeah,
you're not wanted here, clearly.
In the movie.
Clearly, you're not wanted.
In the movie.
So, listen, I was just right on top of something there.
But there are sources of all of these nutrients that are non-toxic. And basically, it amounts to just recycling the nutrients that are in the system. We don't need to mine synthetic nutrients. We can just recycle existing nutrients from our plant.
Right.
That's what composting is all about.
Right.
And that's what the Korean natural farming is about. It's getting the microbes to do the recycling for you. And you're trying to, you know, basically farm microbes and get them to do all this work.
A true closed loop system. You can never have a closed loop system when you have synthetics.
Yeah. Yeah. And this way, you know, every leaf that falls from the tree goes and it gives back the nutrients that it's holding rather than to be burned. Oh my gosh, there's so much slash and burn farming going on amongst people who just don't know any better. Wow. And it's all they've ever done.
Wow.
And it's such a destructive habit, unfortunately.
And they could be fermenting that plant waste into inputs?
Oh, yes. So many
composting
things.
It into inputs, whatever.
There's a lot of regenerative movement in the various countries, you know, where they need to get their land soil restored, their agriculture restored, mm-hmm. because, you know, they've just been through years and years of abuse, colonialism, and all those side effects that happen with it. Mm-hmm. And they're really trying to get the good education out there for regenerative and, you know, building swales and using compost and using the rainwater to not have it run off. And, you know, getting your groundwaters recharged and using animals the right way instead of having them denude your landscape, you know, these kind of things. And people will be practicing this and preaching this and teaching others to do it. And right next door, they've got a neighbor who's still into the slash and burn, and they'll be slashing and burning and then burn down half of this guy's property.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. After all the work. So it's this uphill battle. But it can be done, you know. And the main thing is education. People just aren't educated. I think so many people use the synthetics because they just don't know any better. It's the convenient thing that's always being put forward as being safe. It's in our food. Mm. You know, they wouldn't think that there's people giving them toxic food. Unfortunately, we have toxic food, toxic water, toxic air. Yeah. But, you know, we're just pretending nobody's doing that on purpose. But it's happening regardless. It's not being a lot to mitigate it, except for people like you and I who are just kind of going out of our way to try to avoid things that we know, choosing less toxic solutions at every opportunity.
That's the way to do it. And you need education. Like, that's proper. That's what bothers me about this, Mary Beth, is this is one subject that we deeply agree on. But I think that, like, our version of capitalism is just like so. It's when you take the transparency out, okay, and the truthfulness out, and the education out. Because if you give everybody a choice, that's true freedom. But if you deceive people and put forth these, well, let's just be honest, okay. If when it comes to the argument of synthetic versus organic, and we're talking about how synthetic nutrients are mined, these are limited. Yeah. Let's start with the argument that the we'll run out eventually, right? So we all have to figure this out eventually.
I was back in college in the late, I would say the early 90s, and I was, you know, doing my horticulture classes. And even then the teacher was talking about how the next wars are going to be over phosphorus because we're running out.
It's insane.
And we're like, what? And I'm thinking to myself, now, we don't need to fight wars over phosphorus. We just need to do composting. Now, composting was just coming into fashion then. It was barely being studied. Wow. We had a couple kids in our class who did a special study on it. Like, they tried to make some, and they tried to make some compost tea, you know. And then they were doing also some row composting in place on the garden rows where they grew vegetables and things. And that was working.
Oh, gee.
So they were just beginning to study it very, you know, seriously, rather than to getting themselves weaned off of the synthetic things they'd always used in the garden before. But yeah, when I was learning horticulture, it was just definitely beginning to transition from those, you know, good old things that are stain your cement blue. mm-hmm. God knows what, the smell. But, you know, yeah, thinking about doing things in a different way. I remember in our garden, we started making a compost pile, which was a really neat static pile. You didn't have to turn, but you had to be very careful in your layering. That you just got them, you know, nice, thin but thorough layers of the carbon and the nitrogen materials and just the right amount of water. And they were pretty good because at school, you've got a whole group of people that can always be monitoring and maintaining.
Yeah.
It's a really good way to do it. You've got free labor at school.
Unlike at your garden supply store when you're not there.
Yeah. Oh, please. No.
I had to call back.
It makes me cry.
I had to call back.
Some days. It really does.
Sorry, shouldn't have brought up the pain.
No.
Before we return to Mary Beth Sanchez, I got to remind you about MyGrowPass.com and all of our benefits as we open our doors today. Have you considered joining our membership program? Well, now is the time to do it. There's never been a better time to do it. And I'll tell you, it's because we've been accumulating so much great content. We have a year's worth of AMAs now in the gallery. You can tune in live to the AMAs and get your personal grow questions answered in depth by me and Wolfman and Rich and Rob, weekly member podcast, ad-free episodes of this show, Growcast, and the Homegrown Helpers. You can get both of those things as a member. Discounts, prizes, the resources, the cultivation resources are so cool. Slack channel for members only. So much cool stuff at mygrowpass.com. It's hard to even list it all here. MyGrowPass.com. It really is the world's premier membership program for cannabis cultivators. That's what we set out to do. And that's basically what we did, folks. You got to check it out. And like I said, our doors are open today, but only for a few short weeks. We're going to be closing our doors really shortly here so we can focus on our members, only open every once in a while, focus on the promotion and the marketing, and then get back to tending to our members, which is what we do best. MyGrowPass.com. Go check it out today, everybody. Now is the time. All right, let's get back to Mary Beth Sanchez. Mary Beth, you're awesome. You're an OG. And it's cool because like I'm just scratching the surface of this stuff. Just the fact that I'm not using the bottle makes me like really proud. I have never composted. I've not made my... Now, luckily, I've got the great Rizo Rich within striking distance, and he dropped off some of his FFJ for me. He dropped off some Power Psy for me. So that's huge. But sweet. I guess what I'm saying is like, it's about starting the journey.
If you can't do your own composting, you've got a friend that can do it for you, or somebody that'll make you compost here, somebody that'll make you labs. You know, if you can't do it yourself, hopefully you've got a friend that can, and that way you can still incorporate the system.
Yeah, Buxton Hollow Farm will send you a compost tea kit.
Yeah.
Use the member code. It's like $50.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's no joke.
Very
I'm starting my first little batch. they send it ready to go, and I'm starting that. And again, it's not, okay, that's not me saving all my waste and composting it like I want to one day. Not the best situation in my current setup.
You're doing better nutrient cycling, though.
Okay, right. That's exactly right. I'm doing something.
Yes, yes. You're doing better nutrient cycling because that's where it amounts to is, you know, are we removing these things from the earth in a really toxic way? Mm. And then are we letting them go out into our waste streams and pollute our streams in another really toxic way? We don't really want to do that if we can avoid it. But the thing, you know, like I said, with education, most people they've not been educated about that at all. They've just been told, this is what you put on. This is when you put it on. Don't think twice about it. Spray this now, spray that later.
It's brutal.
And pray to God that your plants don't become immune to whatever the heck you're doing.
it's just tough because there's so many things going against it. You're mining a limited material. It's causing toxicity as you're extracting it from the earth. You're using too much of it in the system. You're overloading the system with it. Mm-hmm. Then it's draining off and causing more pollution. It really is tough to argue for that. Now, if you're dealing with big ag and you start talking about jobs and hungry people, okay, now we're into the territory of politics. But let's leave that aside. In cannabis, listen, man, the organic just tastes better. It's more balanced. It's more flavorful.
Absolutely.
It's more aromatic. I have hope for the cannabis industry because I think that it's going to shed a light on, and by the way, it's no different than a tomato or a mushroom.
Nope.
It really isn't. Those are just as much of an increase in flavor and deliciousness and desirability.
Yep.
So I hope that, I guess what I'm saying is, I hope that the cannabis front kind of pushes organic for everything else.
Absolutely. Because, I think more people are growing up to it because how many people do you know of that just really want to get into growing because they want to do it? I mean, it's really kind of cute to me when I see so many people who were otherwise seemed as just straight as an arrow. You never have guessed it. I've always just wanted to grow a plant.
That's great.
And my wife won't let me or whatever.
Totally, that's true. I've heard that one for sure.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, and now they're finally getting their chance and they're going for it. You know, there's just people who they really haven't thought about because they haven't needed to or whatever. They were always led in another direction. Sometimes it's just convenience. It seems really simple, clear-cut formula. Follow with instructions on the bottle. You'll be okay.
I don't even know though.
But
man.
You know,
the super soils are easier.
Yeah.
I hadn't even with the issues that I did have this run. It was still easier than a synthetic run. And I've grown a lot synthetically.
Right. And what people have to remember, if you know, it may seem confusing at first, but just keep reminding yourself what Mother Nature does.
Right.
Because she doesn't need our help at all.
Right.
She manages to recycle nutrients just by letting the leaves fall on the ground and decay right at the root of the tree. So the same tree is getting its own nutrients back later on down the road.
Before we go any further on this subject right now, I have heard, I'm not going to name names, but there was a pest management specialist who just about had a conniption fit off air about organic growers letting their leaves go back into their soil and that it causes pests and all this stuff. And I was always under the impression that you can take those leaves and, you know, like ferment them into like an FFJ or something. But then I saw, shout out to these guys. I love these guys. Michigan Grow Bros. I saw one of those guys letting their leaves kind of rot on their soil. What do you think of this method? Give me your thoughts.
Well, you know, it's all about the balance. If your system isn't balanced, you know, your garden, if it's not balanced, you know, it could be a problem. If all you're harboring are bad guys, but hopefully you're harboring good guys too. So hopefully you're not creating a little nest of hell. But, you know, it's also part of the way that what stage is it broken down at? Is it, you know, is it going to break down in time? When you're composting, that's what they recommend, is that, you know, you take up the duff and all, you compost it, and then you put it back as a top dressing. And that way you're getting the mulching effect, but without creating a harbor for every nasty thing. But, you know, if there's so many people that have the theory that you just lay stuff down on the ground and let it decay, and you don't necessarily harbor all the pests in the world, although it can happen. But hopefully you have enough diversity in your plants and enough diversity in your insect population that you've got the balance there. You've got the predators for the prey. If you don't think you do, you know, make an investment, get some more into your system. And it's really not that hard to do. It's just a matter of changing a habit that might be an old habit.
And it has to be the right type of biology in the soil, and it has to be present enough, is what you're saying, or else it's just going to definitely cause problems.
Yeah, you need some quantity, you know, balance in the population of predator and prey, just like any other system. It's the same in the microbiological world or in the bug world. Predator and prey have to be balanced.
You know? Okay, is there any good way to tell? I mean, obviously, like, you can just tell that your plants are doing well. I know when I had a little ink cap pop up, everyone was like, oh, the mushroom is a good sign of fungal life. It's like, okay, I guess I'm headed in the right direction then.
Yeah. Well, and then sometimes it's a sign that, whoops, I'm overwatering.
Oh, interesting. Well,
so it can kind of go both ways.
But
you read all your symbols. It can happen to everyone. It's so easy, especially because the climate will change a little, and all of a sudden the plant isn't maybe necessarily drinking as much.
Yes.
You have suddenly switched to a really organic soil, and they really hold water really well. Mm-hmm. And like, you're not, maybe you're used to cocoa, which drains so fast and so well. And
totally
you never
setup.
Have to worry. Yeah, you have just a different setup.
You're so right. And I was just telling someone about watering and how your plant's going to grow. And cannabis grows so fast that it's, in my experience, its thirst will change drastically to where you really do have to change watering strategies pretty frequently from, you know, basically seedling stage up until mid-flower. Yes. It'll finally stop drinking so much and really kind of settle down. But like, you have to be careful not to overwater in the beginning. And if you just transplanted, you don't want to water too much around the perimeter where the roots aren't drinking it. But then as your plant grows, it's going to get thirstier and thirstier. So expand that radius, increase volume, but then decrease volume if you flip into flower, because now into flower, they're less thirsty, especially late flower. So it's like, you really got to go with the flow.
You are so right. I did a webinar once about watering, because it sounds like a simple thing. People think of watering, and you're just pouring some water on. What can be the problem? The plant drinks it up. There you go. But it is so much trickier to get that balance of moisture really at close to that 50% level that you want.
Nice.
To try to maintain.
What do you think about like automatic water soil moisture detectors? I know some.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, like that?
If you're trying to get automated. Well, you know, as long as it's actually working,
right.
If you can maintain, you know, kind of as close as possible to 50% moisture, you're probably doing fine. But I would never want a system where it was intended that people could walk away and never look at the plants. It would be nice for those moments where you have to get away and you can't look at the plants, but you really don't want to encourage people to just have a fully automated system. But I love that concept that you're letting me know, because especially some people really aren't good at judging the moisture in their soil.
It can be tough, yeah.
I think it isn't necessarily intuitive for the whole wide world. So, you know, and rather than beat yourself up about it, get a moisture meter.
I saw someone,
Let that machine talk to you.
Shout out to Woodshed 13 or something on Instagram. He's like a coder. He does his own. He's really cool. He builds all sorts of stuff, and he built his own soil moisture detector that like displays on a little like LED clock thing.
Cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. He
cool.
built his
it's
own.
True.
You should give that guy a follow. People listening, I should shout him out. Better Woodshed. Sorry, Woodshed. Hit me up again. We were talking. Cool guy, though, and he's building all sorts of neat stuff for his grow.
Oh, yeah.
Back around to synthetic nutrients, though. I wanted to make sure to cover while we have time, chelation and...
Oh, yeah. And the EDTA.
Yeah, the EDTA. So just really quick, chelation for maybe someone who's just now tuning in and trying to understand the differences between synthetics and organics. Chelation is a big part of that, right? It's like what, the ionizing or bonding of a material to stabilize the nutrient?
In the fertilizer bottles, that's the main thing they're using the EDTA for is, you know, it's chelating the calcium and magnesium mostly and stabilizing,
So that makes it last longer and also easier uptakeable.
Shelf life.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. All right.
Yeah.
So that's the chelation process and that's a big part of what makes synthetics synthetic.
Yeah. But there are alternatives.
That's what I was just going to ask.
There are alternatives. The problem with the EDTA is that it is super persistent in the environment. It just does not break down very quickly at all. I mean, it just takes forever. And it's used in so many products and processes. It's not just in horticulture. It's used in medicine. It's used in food. It's used in cosmetics and shampoos and everything. So there's just so much of it out there that just doesn't break down. And it's not that it's so toxic. It's just that there's just so much and it doesn't break down. But there are alternatives which do break down much more readily. And it's the trick is to find them because, you know, the common usage of EDTA, just I mean, I look at bottle after bottle and I rarely see the alternatives listed as the thing they're using. And one of the easier to remember is EDDS. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm always looking for EDDS, but I'm not finding a lot of things with it. But that one is much more biodegradable, but it does the same function. Another one goes by the initials MGDA. You know, they have really long names, methyl glycinic acid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But MGDA is another one, which is a much better ability to break down. There's a few options, mm-hmm. you know, in that area of life. There's a thing called IDS, which is another acid that does the same thing as the EDTA, but it takes about 7 days. Mm-hmm. And mostly it's only like sunlight, I think, that will break down EDTA.
So that's why they keep them in the dark bottles. But I'd imagine that the EDTA is probably cheapest, and that's why it's being used the most.
It must be something like that. I mean, that's usually the case. It's always economic, isn't it?
It does
have an ability to kill bacteria, so I think it's not necessarily the most environmentally friendly. If you're in an organic situation, it wouldn't necessarily be helping your biology a lot to use a lot of that.
Well, it's really
and
bad
like I said,
for
because
you
it doesn't
too.
Break down.
It's used as a medicine, but if you look up what it's used as a medicine for, it's for like drawing lead out of your body. Because it's a chelator.
Kind of extreme stuff.
Yeah, totally. It's not like this isn't a supplement we're dealing with here. This is like a real, basically heavy metal attractant chemical.
Yeah.
And if you look at side effects, it's like it is unsafe to have more than 3 grams of EDTA per day. And you shouldn't take it for more than 5 to 7 days. This is talking about the actual treatment, but it's just straight up very, very clearly saying it's unsafe and it causes a host of problems from neurological disorders to kidney disorders to diabetes to heart arrhythmia to asthma to rash to everything. It seems really, really dangerous. I don't know how this got into everything. Actually, you know what?
Yeah.
I do. There's a great documentary on Netflix all about chemicals.
Ooh.
What is the name of that documentary? Chemical.
Darn
I just
it.
Watched it last night.
I'm going to have
chemical
to look for
documentary.
It okay, I'm gonna look
Netflix.
For it.
Now this guy ordered some pajamas for his little daughters, and he opened the bag. He like cut open the packaging and got hit with this waft of chemicals, and it set him on this path to find out what was in this kid's clothing package. It's called Stink.
Right.
The documentary is called Stink because it comes.
They'll say it's fire retardant of some sort.
Jesus,
I gotta breathe this stuff?
You nailed it. In the 50s, all these everyone were burning down because everyone was smoking. People were smoking cigarettes and falling asleep. And like cloth wiring in the walls. And so they changed.
Electric blankets.
Yeah.
They had old electric. Oh, God, they were funky.
So they changed the the formula of cigarettes to go out on their own, but what they used to make the self-stopping cigarettes changed the flavor, so people stopped buying them. So then they stopped making the self-stopping cigarettes and instead started putting fire retardants in carpeting and mat, clothes, everything. Clothes, yeah. Mattresses, yeah. Drapes, wood. It's in our wood.
Really creepy smelling stuff.
So you're breathing all that stuff in and look up stink.
All the time.
You know what? I'll tell you this. It's not over the top, just like bad, hammering it. This guy has a really good way of telling a story and goes and gets a chemical analysis done and finds some banned substances that are being sold for just Americans, just sold to kids. So it's a really interesting one. It's called Stink, and it goes all the way back to, listing things as fragrance when they're not fragrance, and it's pretty cool.
Wow.
And anyways, so I was wondering how this wound up and everything. Basically, that documentary exposes TSCA, the Toxic Controlled Substances Act, and that is what is basically allowing, since they've implemented the Toxic Controlled Substances Act, geez. They've only banned 5 substances, and this was decades and
Isn't
decades
Isn't that
ago.
Amazing?
Yeah. So that's how it all got here, and I do recommend that people check out Stink on Netflix.
If you've got enough money, your stuff is safe.
Oh, it's so bad. Mary Beth, your skin's going to crawl, because he goes up to these people and he just simply asks this politician, what inspired you to write this bill, which, by the way, is called like the Safe Makeup Bill? But in the Safe Makeup Bill, it just gives people complete freedom to use any chemicals they want untested. And it'll just ask the guy, like, what inspired you to do this? What inspired him was the lobbyist who wrote him a check. And the guy's just like, it's so bad.
No doubt.
It'll make your skin crawl, yeah. Mary Beth. It's really rough.
Oh, yeah, it's shameless. Oh, before I forget, I wanted to mention the one last thing. You might want to not choose the synthetic mind nutrients is that the explosive capacity that we all know about recently with the ammonium nitrate, for one thing, potassium also is quite explosive in certain forms. I mean, you can detonate when scratched if you let it get in the right oxygen condition. And there's a lot to... the process that's toxic, but also, you know, the storage. And so you never have to worry about that.
You're sitting on explosives.
What I'm trying to say. Yeah, because, the blast they had in Lebanon right next to fireworks of explosives.
Yeah,
there's one. Then I find out, they discovered there's another big storage stash of the same product in the same harbor, and there's another fire, not as near as the other fire was. It has to get to a really high temperature to actually detonate, and because the other fire was right next to it, it did get to that high.
Oh my god, that's insane. That's a good point, though. I remember like fertilizer being like
explosive dynamite.
Yeah, people grab fertilizer like the old school anarchists or whatever, and that's really interesting.
And you know, phosphorus is what they use on the match heads to get them to ignite, right. And in potassium, that's also ignitable stuff. And so this never happens in the compost pile. The worst thing that'll happen is your pile overheats and it might start on fire, but it's not going to blow up like entire half of a village because Jesus Christ.
That's why it bothers me. It bothers me when they, because they'll use safety as a reason to not let people grow their own and not let people, but it seems to me like the most unsafe thing you can do is drill a hole in the ground to extract explosive toxic materials.
And you know, the places where they do the strip mining, like I say, they leave a wasteland where they had a farmland before. You know, they had little poor people who lived off the land for umpteen millennia now suddenly have no place to go, and their water's poisoned. Their land won't produce food anymore.
I don't want to be a bummer episode, but I do want people to consider, I can't be a party to that.
There's an alternative. There's an alternative, and it isn't that hard to do.
It's easier.
It really isn't.
That's the big joke.
It is. As soon as you just figure out the techniques. Go with that one-star revolution. Very, very little effort.
Nice. Listen, I mean, and you can push back on this if you want, other than yield, you are going to have better success in an organic setup all around. I'm telling you that as someone who grew synthetically for 5 years.
Yeah, but I think even it, over a very short period of time, you'll notice you don't even have a lack of yield at all. You know, like I said, with Gabe Brown, I've talked about him before. He was a conventional farmer in Dakota, South Dakota forever, and he still is, but he's not conventional anymore. He went no-till. And the first thing he did when he went no-till was to no more feeding. He experimentally, though, fed half of his crop the conventional way, and he did the other half with no food at all, the whole corn crop.
Oh, that's right.
And he said his yield was equal to or greater than.
Wow.
And that's in the very first attempt at no feeding, equal to or greater than the one that was being fed the conventional way. So, you know, what are you really getting out of there?
Yeah, that's exactly.
And
right.
Every
less
year it's been better since, you know, every year that he wasn't wiped out by hail. It's been better since.
Right.
And his soil keeps building because he's not putting poison in it anymore. So now he doesn't have dead soil. It's just full. Oh, the amount of earthworms he has in his soil is insane when he puts a shovel in the ground. And he didn't buy these earthworms and set them there. He didn't send out invitations to invite them. He just quit tilling.
That's killer.
Quit tilling.
That's
and quit
so
putting
cool.
out the poison.
I know I asked you this on the coffee show, but I'll ask you here again. Is the kind of antimicrobial effects of the synthetic nutrients, does that mainly come from the like sodium content? Because I know that a lot of these are like salt-based.
Well, it's all salt, you know, and it's hard to talk about salts because we all think of table salt and we're thinking of it in the wrong way. And basically what the salt means is that it dissolves in the water. It dissolves real easily, just like your table salt does in the water. And so what happens with these synthetic nutrients is that they dissolve right away in the water. And that's what makes them so immediately plant available. But also it makes it so easy to just run right off, right through your soil and right out into your waterways and right into your streams. And
into your drinking cup.
Problems happen.
Yeah, that's exactly
which
right.
Which doesn't happen if you're composting and getting that nutrient sequestered in the body of the microbes. That way you've got it sequestered. It's not running off. When your plant needs it, all it's got to do is consume a waste product from that biology, and it's got the nutrient there. It trades with the fungus. It trades with the bacteria. It just
does its thing,
works.
Man.
The system works.
It just works. But when it comes to specifically the salts, I imagine it also has to do, I think you said, with just the overload, right? The fact that there's too much phosphorus.
Yeah, too much. They can handle a little, but they can't handle a lot.
Okay.
And so, that's when the trouble comes.
It's tough. Well, this is a lovely exploration. Yeah. What do we have? We got to make sure we wrap up right, because I know we have two fan questions we had to get to.
Oh, that's right. I want that question.
Okay, we're going to skip one of the questions that was from me and move into the fan questions. A listener has a question about using sprays while also using beneficial predatory insects. He wants to know, is it even possible to use those two together?
Oh, yeah.
Which ones do you want to? You want to kill the bad guys, but not the good guys, I assume.
Definitely do. Well, what I like to do, because, you know, I'm a Zymes fanatic, I like to spray that once a week, but then you can apply your predator insects, you know, the very next day, or actually even later the same day, as long as the stuff is dried, it's not going to hurt them at all. And so that you make sure that you always have them out there, and you should always have wildflowers or some kind in a patch somewhere nearby. If you're indoors, if you don't have a place to have wildflowers indoors, you can get artificial pollen nectar things for them so that they have something to feed on when there are no pests for them.
Interesting.
Then they have a place to go and, you know, make them little places to go and hide. If you want to use that on an indoor system, but he's probably talking more about an outdoor thing.
I think it does seem to be more applicable. I mean, I want to try some predator insects indoors, but it seems like the outdoor application makes way more sense for the predator bugs.
Yeah. And whatever you're doing, make sure to use plenty with the predator insects, because if they don't, you know, really get on it, your pests will multiply so quickly, it's kind of scary.
Send in the legions. But you're saying Zymes? Zymes is your answer? Zymes kills the bad ones, not the good ones?
See, most of the predators are quick to move. They don't get necessarily caught in the spray. Most of them are little flighty things that are, you know, like the predator wasps and such, or the little mites. They're much more quicker moving than the pest mites, which are pretty much latching on to your plant and just sucking away.
Right.
And the predators are trucking around just going kicking ass. And so they're, you know, they're easy for them to get out of the way when stuff starts happening.
Interesting.
Whereas
shit.
The other guys just kind of sit there and go, oh, this is creepy. When they're getting sprayed.
I didn't think about it like that.
And yeah, they kind of start melting. But I've noticed with many growers who use both that they say, well, sometimes these enzymes can knock down the mites, for instance, somewhat. Mm-hmm. The predator mites, but that their population is so strong and healthy, they bounce back very quickly. But it's all helping to get the pest mites down, and that's the main thing. You just want to make sure that your crop is not being economically harmed by the amount of pests. You know, everybody can stand a certain amount of grasshoppers in the field, but
right.
when they're taking every leaf off the tree, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's part of the integrated pest management. I think that people forget, which is. Being okay with the occasional pest in your garden.
Yeah. Or, so as long as their population is not outrageous, you know, okay, well, yeah, there's some of that, but that's going to attract a bird that'll eat it or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember once I had some aphids on a thing that I was looking out of a back window, some sort of a, I don't know if it was a piece of dill or what it was out in the backyard. It was not a really important plant to me, but I noticed it was just one day, you know, how you look and all of a sudden it's covered with aphids. Well, how did they get there? But they cover it now. And I thought to myself, I remembered what my horticulture teacher told me. And he said, you know, that's just an attraction for the birds. So I thought, okay, I'm going to leave it for a minute or two and see what happens. You know, I think it was the next day or whatever, but I could see that there was a bird, sure enough, eating every little bug right off of it. It was a stick of candy. And, you know, it does work if you give it a chance. And that's the thing that Gabe Brown learned in his operation in the Dakotas was that as long as he has the wild land, he has the animals on the farm, and he has the plants on the farm, and everybody's doing their thing, he has enough diversity that he doesn't have to worry about spraying out anything because he has enough predators that take care of any pests that may occur.
Totally. That's what's up. I was dealing with that horrible fly infestation, and then I had the maggots in my garbage, and one of my good friends was like, take that garbage can out into the front yard. Finds a tree with some birds in it and open it up and leave it next to the tree. And the birds just go nuts and they fucking kill it. Genius. So that's exactly what you were just saying with the aphids. That's just really cool shit. And you don't really think about it until someone tells you, and then you can actually make it happen and see it in action. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
We're on the subject of zymes. So let's wrap it up with this last fan question that I got. So I'm a huge fan of the zymes. We used to be partners with them. We still love them because of their message and the fact that they're residue free and you can spray it late and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I used it on my peppers. I used it on my basil. I used it on my cannabis.
Cool.
I had no problems.
Yeah.
Zero problems. None.
Yeah.
Now, Mary Beth, two separate talented growers who I know didn't mismix their ratios have both come to me and said that the Dr. Zymes has caused kind of like burning on their plants, on their lower leaves. I never experienced this. Do you know why that could be? I find it very hard to believe. I know these growers well. I know they didn't mismix it.
Yeah.
Do you know what could cause that?
Well, I know that the instructions on the bottle were very confusing. And I think that they have finally told me that they have got that change so that it won't be so confusing because it's really what's on the bottle is for general plants and it's not cannabis specific. And I keep telling people, if you use more than 4 ounces per gallon on cannabis, it's too tender. Mm. It can cause some burning.
Okay.
In fact, I have really burned plants of my own where I have been very carelessly I grabbed a bottle of Dr. Zymes and water forgot that I didn't measure it at all when I mixed it. It was just to use for cleaning around the house, so I didn't care. But then I thought, you know, I'm in a distracted moment. I went and I sprayed the plants and I went the next day, uh-oh, because they were young. So I lost almost all the leaves. Now, the leaves all come back, though. And then the plant is pest-free.
Yeah, there you go, baby.
If you do mix it too strong, then you can burn those little things off
because it's
an acidic product. And so that's also part of why I always tell people it's a really good idea to, before you spray it at all, adjust the pH to 6 to 7, somewhere between 6 and 7 is okay. Adjust the pH and that way you're not going to have any chance of burning anything. So it can happen and it's not necessarily misused. It's that the instructions were not as fabulous as theirs, so hopefully are now. And it really confused a lot of people. A lot of people thought they were spraying, you know, extra strength was the strength to use because they thought their problem was real bad, but they weren't thinking about the tenderness of the plant. They were thinking of, I've got a lot of bugs.
Right, you know? Right.
And extra strength is, which is just too strong. It's okay for some things, you know, if you're spraying a hard bark and a beetle or something, but not the tender leafed plant and a, you know, small sucking insect. So that, there is a learning curve there too. And hopefully that'll be cured by the new label. I complained many times. We've had some customers complain the same thing and it's the same confusion. And so that hopefully I'm knocking on wood that this new label is going to be the thing that stops that confusion. It can happen, yes.
Love it. Well, listen, we are loving what you're doing at MBS IPM on Instagram. We're loving what you're doing with Growing Wild Garden Supply, Reppin' Zymes, of course. That's it. That's it for today. What's going on in your world? Shout out to whatever you're doing. Like, what are you doing? Just doing your webinars and posting pictures of your garden, trying to stay ash free?
Shout out to all the struggling farmers who have survived the fires and are still trying to keep on surviving, and to those who are trying to figure out what they're going to do now because some of them were burned out completely. A lot of that going on.
Right.
And wish everybody the most successful season possible. This has been one of the most challenging years ever in so many ways.
No kidding.
Woo.
Yeah, for
one thing after another.
Everybody, so, and then especially
do your best, people. Yeah, do your best. Keep your head up. Try to keep on carrying on and do things in the least toxic way because the world's getting scarier and we don't need to add more poison to the pile. if that helps at all.
Mary Beth, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Really, everyone at GrowCast appreciates you. Thank you for everything you're doing and for getting in the growers chat and helping us. We appreciate you so much.
I love being introduced to GrowCast. All you do, Jordan, God bless you. You're great.
Awesome. Okay,
thank you
that's
so
right.
Much.
You do like a little sign off before we wrap the show. So we'll let you go.
Hey, man.
Appreciate you.
You're awesome.
Take care.
You're awesome, dude.
I'll talk to you. I'll write you shortly later today, Mary Beth.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love Mary Beth Sanchez. She's the best. Oh, that's all, folks. Remember, mygrowpass.com opens today. It's open now. Go and get it. All that good stuff. Loving it. Loving the organic growing. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Stay tuned. Stay tuned for my grow vlog for this next run. Lots of fun stuff coming our way once I'm back from the islands. Okay, everybody. Be safe out there and grow smarter. I'll see you on GrowCast next time. That's our show for today, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to Mary Beth. Really enjoy speaking to Mary Beth Sanchez. ACI, AC Infinity, our choice fans, the best fans for growing cannabis. ACInfinity.com, promo code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. You guys know I love my AC Infinities. They've got smart controllers. They'll turn on at a certain temperature or humidity. They'll turn on for certain times. Even their, quote, dumb fans have a 10-speed controller. I can't even deal with these non-controller fans. And then you go and buy a router speed controller, but if you buy the wrong one, it fucks up your motor. Nah, skip it. ACInfinity.com, GrowCast15, get the best fans out there. They're whisper quiet. They're extremely powerful. One thing that the ad copy doesn't even say that I realized as soon as I got the thing, they're lightweight. They're light as a feather. Lugging a freaking huge fan up to the poles in your grow tent is usually a challenge, and I pop mine up no problem because they're lightweight. I could talk about these fans all day, but I'm not going to. ACInfinity.com, promo code GrowCast15. Thanks for supporting us, everybody. Thanks for supporting membership. Cannot thank you guys enough. I hope you have an incredible harvest this time and next time and all the times for that matter. If you're struggling, I hope you learn from your struggles, and I hope you join our Slack chat, growcastpodcast.com/action, if you need any advice from us or just want to share pictures of your grow. That's all, folks. Thank you so much. I love each and every one of you listeners. I mean it. Stay healthy out there. Stay safe, be kind, and I'll see you next time on GrowCast. Bye-bye.